Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.
This place is different, special. The others don't want to talk about it because it scares them, but we all know it. We all feel it.
Do you really think all this is an accident? That we, a group of strangers, survived? Many of us with just superficial injuries? Do you think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
The island.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I would leave a trail of individually wrapped candies I've been hoarding as I'm being led through the jungle so that Jack could follow me.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and if I were being dragged through the jungle by Tom Cruise's cousin, I would leave a trail of crumpled up cans of passion fruit LaCroix, which, as we established off air, is maybe not the stealthiest thing to do, but is something I always have on my person.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I don't really have anything to leave for Jack, but I would like to say that in this scenario, I'm probably still in the caves, because let me tell you something. I'm not chasing anyone into the jungle. I'm not having any arguments. I'm not trying to convince anyone to move to the caves. I'm just keeping off to the side by myself and eating some boar and some bananas and just waiting it all out.
That would have seemed boring up until this episode of Lost, the television show Lost, where the stakes are upped both by the threat of other people and by a mysterious discovery that Locke and Boone make in the jungle. We're here to talk about episode 11 of season 1 of Lost. All the best cowboys have daddy issues. If this is your first time with the podcast, you should know we split it into two different sections. The first section you're in right now and continues for about half the podcast, it's called The Calm, where we will not talk about any other parts of Lost beyond season 1, episode 11. Just about what we've seen so far on this rewatch. Then, if you maybe are returning to the series after having watched all of Lost when it originally aired, you could join us for the second half of the podcast called The Storm, where we're allowed to pull from any knowledge on the internet or sometimes just weird theories that we're smashing together in this rewatch that involve some elements we can't talk about now. So if you hear any bleeps in this first part of the podcast, that's us keeping you safe and keeping all the spoilers in the second part, The Storm, time codes, in your description. Excellent. That's the show. Joanna, do we have any reviews this week of this podcast that's rewatching Lost called The Storm?
Oh, this Storm Lost podcast? We do have a few reviews. Thank you so much for asking me, Dave. This one comes from K White Listens. Out on Lost, in on the trio, 5 stars. I have a complicated relationship with Lost. I understand the ending, and in many ways it's satisfying. I'm just frustrated by the lack of resolutions for some of the show's mysteries. So when one of my fave podcasts switched topics, I was sad. But staying at the Small Council on Patreon, loving the bonus content, and excited for the Far From Home pod, and missed the chemistry and insights from this incredible trio enough to revisit what was captivating, if a bit frustrating, TV. Thank you to all three of you for the hours of companionship and entertainment. See you at the con. So That's someone who doesn't even like Lost, but is still listening. Thank you very much for that. On the other side, we will get this, this review from someone who goes by SpikeLove51. Thank you, SpikeLove51.
playing to the audience here.
Love Lost, love this podcast, 5 stars. I was so thrilled to find this podcast on my second all-time favorite show. Buffy is the first. I love Lost and I love the ending, and I've rewatched the whole series more times than I can count, so I especially like the setup with the storm portion where the host discussed the whole series. Great setup to accommodate first-timers with the calm and please people like me with the storm. Please keep laughing. Hearing the three delightful hosts interact and poke fun and laugh makes me so happy. We need this very much right now with so much to cry about in this country. Wow, that review took a turn. Thank you, SpikeLove51. And thank you to all of you. We've gotten a lot of nice Lost reviews, so I just really appreciate you guys keeping up with us as we transition into this brave new world.
That's a good point. As far as the Calm audience knows, all of our Losties are still on that island, unaware of the things that are happening in America right now. I think that's what the review really meant.
Okay. Wait, are you saying on that island, George W. Bush is forever president?
Yeah, as far as they know.
All right.
I mean, I imagine that they've, you know, guessed that there has been another president, and there's been an orderly transition of power. Just, they guess wrong, I'm going to assume. From what I remember of being in 2004. Neil, your section's called Found Signals, where we get to hear from our listeners. Usually we have like a story of how people have been getting into Lost, but what do you have for us this week?
Dave, guess what? I've got a story of how someone came to Lost.
Excellent. On brand.
But first, here are places you can place your signals so that we will see them. You can always email us, hosts@stormpodcast.com. Get on our new website, stormpodcast.com. Shouts to Diana, who made the website. Twitter, @stormpodcast, as always. And remember, Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, where the off-season tour lives on forever. We'll obviously be doing storm chasing again this week. The email that I've brought is from Julie. Julie says, I'm very much enjoying this rewatch. Season 5 was about to premiere in January, right after one of my winter breaks in law school. My then boyfriend, now husband, was a fan, and ABC had the entirety of the first 4 seasons on their website. I remember that one, Julie. I remember watching it on their website. I binged all 4 seasons in 10 days to be ready to watch season 5, probably my proudest accomplishment. And now, well, I still can't help binging. The first season is so incredibly watchable and gripping, and in mindlessly watching other shows recently, I've realized nothing can be Lost. It's interesting to rewatch and think how much I should have picked up about big reveals in general. Is it just more obvious now that I know, or did I miss a lot of details in my quest to finish the show? One last thing. Regrettably, I've fallen down in 2019 after not falling down in 2018. I tripped on a curb while walking my dog, not named Vincent. Fingers crossed for 2020. Julie, we are fingers crossed for you for not falling down in 2020, among other things for 2020. This is a good question, though, because it's part of our, the sort of mantra. And that's not really a mantra. It's just sort of the guiding ethos of our show, our podcast, is that it's all about execution, and that knowing what's going to happen doesn't necessarily make it worse. And this episode is a really good example of that I think we're going to talk about, which is the way it ends with Charlie. And but do you find that as you go over things a second, third time, does it lose punch? Do you gain appreciation? I don't know. How are you feeling so far?
I think it hones it down. It's like a large stone in the middle of a river. Just like the more times you go over it, you're going to smooth out all the jagged edges and I think really see it for what it is. And in the case of, I think, this week, the episode's really thrilling. Yeah, in some other cases, either in later seasons or I think so far the only one I could really slap on that is The Moth. And I know I've been hard on The Moth before, but I stand by it. It really kind of reveals itself as not having much there, but a lot of the first season, at least in returning for me, rewatching with the knowledge just makes me like, oh, this cut from this thing to this thing has like a new meaning now in my mind. And I know in The Storm, we've had a lot of questions of what did the writers know when in this first season? And I look forward to eventually having answers to those questions.
Yeah, I think for me, I know that I mentioned a lot. We already had, I was not the first person to shout out Diana on this podcast, but I've been, you know, I rewatched the whole thing by myself, you know, this last couple months or whatever. And then now I'm on another track with our producer, my roommate Diana. Watching with her is so fun. And also just like hearing her talk about it is so fun for me. And it's similar to like what it is like watching with you, our listeners who haven't seen it for the first time, because when people get excited about a character and they're like, oh my God, I love this character. And you like want to agree or disagree, but you have to keep it cool and just like all, I don't know, all the stuff. Or, I was just watching an episode with her the other night and I knew something like, it was going to end on like this big thing. And I like turned to just watch her face as it happened. Cause I was really excited to see. And then she just goes like, holy shit. And that's just really, really fun. So I don't know, watching people discover Lost for the first time or rediscover things that they didn't remember, has been really, really fun for me. So
nice.
Excellent.
All right. That's all I have.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I don't think that works that way for all series is, I had to speed watch some Stranger Things season 2 to make sure I knew what season 3 was. And I'm like, oh man, I only needed to see these things once to really, you know, absorb what needed to be absorbed. But definitely for where we are in Lost, this is peak rewatchability, which is what I try to tell people. I'm trying to sell them on this podcast, which is not you. You're obviously already listening to the podcast. But if you need to try to sell people, be like, yes, I know Lost is gonna, you know, has some hard times, but they're in the first season and it's all gold.
Well, I think that, what helps is that, you know, as Neil was just saying, like execution, the oh my God and twists and theories is like one really fun part about Lost, but the other, you know, is the other guiding mantra of this podcast for me, which is like, if you don't have character, you don't have anything. And so like for me, rewatching these character interactions, like I think I mentioned recently that when I rewatched the season 1 finale run, which is, I think, what, 3 episodes of a finale?
It could be 7.
It's like 20 episodes finale. I wept multiple times and I had just seen it. And I still cried at like certain musical cues and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think for me, like the emotion and the characters and, you know, the execution is.
There's a musical cue in this episode that we're talking about this week at the end that gets me every time.
I can't wait to talk about it.
So wait, we're probably going to, cause we paired up the pilot. We're going to pair up the finale, the 3-part finale. So,
which means that the podcast has to be 6 hours long.
Well, but that also means that this is halfway for us in season 2 at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
So season 1. Congratulations, everybody. We're halfway to season 1, here with, All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues. We got halfway through the season and it's our first repeat flashback character episode, technically. Because we don't count the pilot as being a solo Jack episode. Neil, what happened this week?
Yes. In this episode, All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues. Directed by Stephen Williams, a recurring director of Lost episodes. Written by Javier Grijo-Marswash. I think that's right. Nope, that's probably not even right. Anyway, we'll get it eventually. There's more of those. There's more Javi episodes. On the island this week, Claire and Charlie have been taken, which prompts Jack to run off with absolutely no plan whatsoever, but he knows he has to fix it. Locke then assembles a search party with Kate and Boone. Boone, who is being upgraded to the varsity squad this week. we learn that back home, Hurley was also known as something of a warrior himself. He later loses $20,000 playing backgammon to Waltz. So I'm not sure what Hurley was a warrior of, but it was not backgammon. Locke, we cut back to our search party. Locke and Boone decide to go one way. Surprise Tracker Kate and Jack go in another, and despite his obvious need to rush into being the hero of the situation, Jack does stop to give Kate a hard time about her past, which is another recurring Jack thing. Elsewhere, John Locke can predict the weather up to within a minute. It's pretty good. Back at the old caves and camp situation, Sawyer has a chat with Saeed, which begins with a dash of racism, and ends with him saying he's been keeping the signal fire going. So, you know, they're still maybe on the same team a little bit. Who knows? Back in search party land, Jack gets his ass beat by Ethan. It's a tough break for Jack. And then Jack and Kate find Charlie hanging from a tree. Perhaps, I would say, the most haunting lost image yet is the image of Charlie hanging from the tree. And then they do what they do best. Kate climbs a tree. Jack is very stubborn. And eventually Charlie wakes up. So that's good, except Charlie's pretty dark now, so that's less good. In flashbacks, we actually get a very efficient flashback sequence this week in which Jack's father gets sauced over lunch and then basically kills a woman on the operating table. Great. And then he tries to convince Jack to cover it up with him, which Jack goes along with for a while, until later in the episode when Jack finds out that the woman who died was pregnant, which prompts him to turn on his father and tell the truth. It all ends with Locke and Boone, who are still searching, even though the trail has gone dry, but they find something in the ground, some sort of steel thing that we're going to need to know more of. And I put the eyes emoji in the notes for the steel thing.
It has a steel thing, eyes emoji.
So that's what happened this week on Lost.
Soon we'll have an unbeepable name that we could call the steel thing.
But
we'll
I almost wrote that in the notes, and I was like, wait, that actually is a spoiler. Like, as I was, because I do this as I'm watching the episode, so like I'm getting to it and I'm like, oh cool, but then they never in this episode so
start uncovering something, and Boone's like, is it the plane? Yes, good, very thorough. I think you left out Michael being butthurt at being part of a search party and forming his search party.
I've got five people who come with me. Don't worry about it. They all have names. It's fine. It's fine.
They don't even go here. Yeah. I had a little bit more to say about Michael and Walt, but that felt a little stormy.
Oh, okay. Well, then we will leave that there and not return to it outside of saying that that happened. And once again, Michael seems to be getting hissy at some things, so he doesn't have to be. But it's tough being on the island and being isolated for this long. Just last week, we were thinking, you know, maybe Claire wasn't being attacked in her sleep. And now, at the end of this week, we learn that from Charlie that they have been after Claire all along, and this was all sort of a ruse. But is one of my favorite Lost episodes ever, because this episode has everything I like about the first season of Lost. It has Jack running into the jungle for no reason, convinced that he's right, and then he ends up like sort of being right, but just through like blind faith, because we get to see his flashback, we're like cool with it. It has missions, it has teams, it has Sawyer and Saeed having like a showdown, but that doesn't actually like erupt into violence, but instead, you know, kind of brings them closer together and faces them outwards towards another mystery. That mystery is the others, so we finally have an antagonistic force on the island that's obviously antagonistic. It's us versus them. It's light versus dark. I like it. This is, I think, the beginning of the first season, turning into more of a mystery box show that the pilot was supposed to be, until, as we talked about on the pilot episode, they sort of pulled the original pitch back a little bit to make it less of a science fiction series and more of like a thriller jungle action mystery series. But as I've said on previous episodes, these early episodes are have a lot of stereotypes and then like jungle situations that are more like a survivor, who's going to trust who, where are we going to get the hidden medication, who has the pilot manifest, all these stranded points of contention, and now I think they really split into island mystery and character backstory really paying off. I think that episode 11 is the time when Lost really starts doing it for me in terms of mystery and heightened drama. Joanna, let's start with you this episode. This is the second Jack episode, and we finally get to learn what we was hinted about in his first flashback, the thing that broke him and his father. What did you think about this, as Neil was saying, pretty well self-contained, dramatic Jack flashback story?
I thought it was okay. I don't know. I think there's more interesting. I guess this is to our listener's point. I think there's more interesting Christian Shepherd stuff, in the future, and that this is like, it still feels a little broad to me. And I think we'll get more of the nuance of this relationship, as the show unfolds. I don't think that's a spoiler to say. It's okay. Is Jack's big turn in this episode, in this flashback, because as Neil pointed out, he finds out that the woman was pregnant. On Lostpedia, it says he recognized the gesture, like his dad puts a hand on the guy's shoulder in a way that makes Jack seethe.
It feels to me in this episode like it's a combination of things.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm
yeah. No, I'm no, no. That's a good point out is the shoulder thing, because they linger on that for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like this snowball of things where Jack sort of figures out that his father has been manipulating him. You know, the thing that we can see very clearly in that scene where they have the argument, Jack doesn't figure it out until later. Jack's a little slow on the uptake.
Sometimes. But when he gets mad, boy, is he mad.
Oh, boy. Run fast.
And in circles.
In circles. That's like the best just symbol of like Jack angrily charging headlong into the jungle. And then running in circles for an hour until the people have actual skills come and fight.
Well, and it's a good little show don't tell way of, you know, cutting the line between Jack and Locke, who we believe to be sort of our two main, even though there is no sort of main characters, these are sort of the two main forces that are leading the people on the island. And it's just so funny that Jack just goes crazy running off, and eventually Locke goes back, packs up his stuff, gets more people, creates a plan, and then like casually just Michael. Finds Jack.
Keeps a visual line of sight as he's going through the
right.
And all that time Jack was running in a circle that entire time.
And the best line,
I gotta find him. Oh, I'm gonna find him.
Running in a circle.
I'm the hero.
Running in a circle like viciously remembering things.
And the best line to me is early in the whole sequence when Kate is like, well, Jack's gonna get away, and Locke's like, we'll catch up. He's not going anywhere.
I actually think the big, like, one of the big revelations of this episode doesn't come in the flashback. Though, I mean, yeah, we learn what we suspected, that Christian has a drinking problem, which is why his ghostly sound was the tinkling of ice in the glass. You know, and how directly Jack was involved in ending his father's career and stuff like that. All of that, which is what his mom accuses him of early on. But I think a big and interesting revelation of this episode actually comes when we find out that Kate is also a tracker, which feels like maybe something that they didn't initially plan. And then they're like, we're going to need more than one.
Yeah. And, we're going to have multiple jungle teams.
Yeah, we're going to need multiple trackers. And I think if they handle it really well in terms of like, I like the revelation of it. You know, she says one of my favorite like Lost drinking game phrases, which is dummy trail. Right. So, you know, they might have set up a dummy trail. Go ahead and take a drink every time they say that. But, Locke absorbs the information. He says, you know, something like, my, aren't you full of surprises or something like that, but not in like a shitty, sexist way. I really like the way that Locke absorbs this information, and he doesn't seem threatened. And he's just sort of like, ah, I see. Noted. Got it. And then Jack is just a full-on dick about it, which is distracting you from the fact that, like, this is brand new information. That, like, why hasn't Kate mentioned this before? Like, you're too busy being like, stop being a dick, Jack. Like, thanks so much. And then we get some of Kate's, you know, daddy issues stuff coming through. The title of this episode, All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues, is a reference to Pete Townsend album, but I love the title of this episode because, you know, this is like the fourth or fifth dad issue. Like, you know, cause, Son has daddy issues. Sawyer has daddy issues. Jack has daddy issues. And Kate, as we learn in this episode, I don't know about issues. We learned she has some emotions around her dad. Is there anyone else?
I think if she brings up emotions in an episode titled All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues, it's fair to assume that she has daddy issues.
All right.
That seems like a safe thing the show is telegraphing.
All right. So Kate has daddy issues. That's
Jack.
About all we, yeah. And Jack, that's about all we can say for now. But guess what? It's not all the ones that will come up. So I just like, I just feel
those
like,
are just the ones we know about so far.
Yeah. I think those are all the ones we know about so far. So and I guess we could say Walt has daddy issues. We find out that Walt has a second daddy.
Walt has some daddy issues in this episode.
So, you know, it feels like the show calling itself out. You know what I mean? Like, it's a reference to an album, yes, but they're also like, yeah, we know. We're doing a lot of daddy issues. We get it. If we say it, you can't say it, okay? So, anyway.
I think that Neil was saying that there's, you know, this Jack and Locke sort of being two leads of the team. And I definitely think that ends up being true. But I think it starts here really being true because the past few episodes, Locke's been lying low, just talking about skin and bore and contributing opinions to other people's ventures. But now he's, you know, been reactivated because he has a purpose, I think. And I think Locke with a purpose is a much more activated character and creates it's like really harsh dichotomy between him and Jack, who when Jack's given like a purpose to do something, he kind of gets all flustered about like what sort of guilt that choice has and if he's the best person to be a leader. And here, not only is he like reliving a whole flashback with his dad, but he feels bad that he didn't believe Claire last episode when she said she was being attacked. So yeah, Jack mindlessly wandering into the forest and then Locke very purposefully striding into the forest. And then both of them happening across different conclusions that are equally as important. Like I said, some of my favorite parts of Lost.
But like, why is Jack the leader when like Kate has the skill set is the question. A question. There's, you know, and it goes back to like sort of the initial purpose of the initial premise of the show was that Jack was going to die and Kate was going to be the leader. And here she shows up and she has tracking skills and Jack is just charging ahead and Kate's like, slow down. She's like, I'm not as good as Locke, which I actually don't think is true. That feels like classic female insecurity, to be honest with you.
It's thousands of years of internalized misogyny.
She's like, I'm not as good as Locke. I was like, you pointed out an inconsistency in Locke's and they're on the right trail, so that which is the trail that
yeah, I would say
that pointed out, so.
Based on who actually finds Charlie,
right,
Kate is a better tracker than Locke. Locke gets lost, stops following a trail, has a feeling, and then find something in the jungle. That's what Locke does in this episode, but he does it calmly, so we believe that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and he has Boone there to instill some awe, not believing his story, right, about being a manager for a box company.
He's got almost Captain America fooled.
I love when Boone's like, were you a hitman? Come on, you can tell me.
We're on an island together. This is perfectly normal.
Please tell me about being a hitman. Anyway.
I like it because Terry O'Quinn gets to talk about having not seen Star Trek or not being familiar with red shirts from Star Trek, despite the fact that he played a captain in Star Trek The Next Generation Season 7 that had like some mutinous ideas. So he's been a very stern captain that's created his own red shirts.
You know what I like about this? I had everything. Thought while I was
you
watching.
You like everything about
well,
it.
Well, yes, I like everything, but I do like how Lost doesn't like pigeonhole one character as the character who brings up pop culture references. Like, everyone kind of does it.
Mostly Hurley, though.
It's a lot Hurley, but I like having Boone do it here, because then it's like, Boone is talking about how he runs his mother's wedding planning business, but he's also talking about Star Trek. This is probably the most that I like Boone, is in this one episode.
I agree. Yeah, it's funny because we've been mentioning red shirts as just like a pop culture phrase, and then we had some of our listeners write in and be like, what are these red shirts you're talking about? So here's what
And then
we're talking
Lost
about.
Explained it to him.
We're talking about all the people on the beach, like Ethan kind of was when he showed up. And you're like, who's this guy? This guy isn't in the cast. Turns out you were right. Have I already
like
said
the guy that? With hives.
Yeah.
He feels like a red shirt kind of guy.
Red shirt. rugby shirt girl. There's a girl with like the crop top rugby shirt. She's a rich, despite the blue stripes on her shirt, she is technically a red shirt. And I can't remember how well Boone explains it in the episode, but basically it's because, you know, ensigns on away missions, not just ensigns. Don't at me, Star Trek, fans. But anyway, often disposable characters on Star Trek would wear red shirts, whereas like the officers are wearing gold and blue and stuff like that. And so they would die on away missions. Go ahead and watch Galaxy Quest if you don't know what we're talking about. But
it's actually different classifications of officer, but yes, absolutely correct.
I said don't at me.
I just saved you a whole bunch of ads by correcting you where everybody could see.
I do appreciate John Locke being like, yeah, this sounds like a shitty captain.
yeah.
He's so calm. That's why we follow him.
He's definitely a Picard fan. We know that about Terry O'Quinn.
We should note that Terry O'Quinn himself did wear a red uniform when he was a captain on Next Gen. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it didn't make sense to him.
he's got like a zip front, like polar tech type of outfit. It's a very interesting look. Anyway.
He got the 1993 Star Trek uniform instead of the 60s one. So it really works for the opposing figure to be cut.
It's a lot of shoulders. It's a lot of shoulders. Okay. Anyway.
Well, that's the good thing about, nope. Sorry. Still not talking about Star Trek. That's the good thing about appearing on the seventh season is the outfits were so horrible. The first two seasons you have like, Patrick Stewart being like, look, we're a very popular television show. Please make these so we could wear them like for filming a television show's schedule. So that's where you get like the cool coats with dramatic shoulders and stuff instead of the one piece stuff. You also enter the era of Riker straightening his suit every time he stands up to make sure his wardrobe fits.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about when Deanna Troi definitely wore delightful onesie jumpsuits in the first few seasons of Star Trek Next Generation. Just kidding.
I am sure, yeah, that one, yes. There's a still of her and I think Dr. Crusher doing some sort of exercise that like comes up every time you Google like horrible Star Trek Next Generation outfits. And it's horrible. They're definitely, everybody got more comfortable outfits as the seasons wore on. So season 7, good time for Tara Gwynn to get an outfit. Digression! Over.
Wait.
Back to, oh, nope. Not over. We could talk about Star Trek costuming more. Let's do it.
What other main Lost, actor was on Star Trek?
This feels like it's main Lost actor. So like main cast. Mm-hmm. Harold Perrineau?
Not that I know of.
No. He seems like somebody who would have been on Star Trek. He was around. He did a lot of stuff. Shit,
no,
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to scroll through it and I can't pull anybody out. Who is it, Joanna?
It is Daniel Day Kim, who appeared on Voyager with some fun forehead makeup and also on Enterprise. So,
damn.
Yep. Don't at me, Trekkies. All right.
Daniel Day Kim also surprisingly in the 2019 Hellboy movie.
That one,
so there's
I do
that.
Remember.
Well, that was a like whole new story.
It doesn't involve red shirting, as far as I know. I haven't seen it yet.
No.
Okay. Good. Anyway, we get a game of backgammon between Hurley and Walt, where we get a return to like the black and white theme, and we get a very, very lucky Walt. I assume that, like I was saying before, the reintroduction of games here is because this is the episode that introduces an actual antagonist force. Someone's come into the camp who wasn't there before and taken one of those pregnant women. Is it just there to maybe show us that Walt's really gotten good at backgammon? Neil, what did you think about this side plot?
Well, it gives us a chance to spend some time with Walt. And just to hear Walt's thoughts on his dad. And I love the Hurley part. I just love any minute of screen time that Hurley gets, because him getting absolutely destroyed by Walt in backgammon, but also saying that he finished 17th at a tournament once, is the most Hurley shit. And I think it's great. I think that I don't want to say any more about Walt. That's where I'm at.
All right. Perfect.
Well, I mean, it's a big reveal to be like, oh no, not Michael, my other dad. Like,
oh, is that the first time we've?
Yeah,
I mean, I think we've heard. Okay, let's say it is, because Joanne is probably on point here, that we're now getting the idea that the Walt Michael family structure is a lot more complicated.
I mean, I think he mentioned living with his mom, but I'm not sure that he mentioned another dad.
The other dad? Oh yeah.
This is where the multi-track rewatch of my brain fritzes out, because I'm like, we haven't seen a Michael and Walt episode yet.
Yep. You just tesseracted back to the
damn. We haven't. Okay. So yeah, I guess that is a pretty big reveal that Walt has another dad.
Oh, you guys, now I'm getting JanSport sponsored backpacks ads on my Lost.
Thanks to Sawyer.
All right, that's my excuse to talk about the most 2004 thing about this episode.
All right, most 2004 thing about this episode.
So, I mean, we can go back to talking about calm stuff about this episode, but I just want to explain to our listeners why I'm getting JanSport ads, which is because I was looking up JanSport backpacks earlier, because one of my four candidates for the most 2004 thing about this episode is Sawyer's backpack. This isn't the first time we've seen it, but it's a black JanSport suede bottom backpack with two side zip pockets. I had this backpack in high school. A bunch of my friends had this backpack in high school. JanSport no longer makes this backpack. And in fact, I had to find it by typing vintage JanSport backpack into, the Googles. So that is officially a candidate. Sawyer's vintage black JanSport backpack.
But not just the backpack, but also the way he carries it, which is that shoulder. Like the one shoulder, and then having like the long, like you pull the strap to almost as long as it can, so it like sags back.
Yeah, so you're like doing chill. as messenger bag of a backpack as you can.
Much damage to your spine as the backpack was supposed to save you in the first place.
Yeah, okay. They made him with two straps, but you never used the second strap.
I know, and you just want to tell children, your spine will not always be this springy. All right, so okay. So Sawyer's vintage one strap JanSport backpack situation. Sawyer, this is a lot of it comes from Sawyer actually this episode. We're leaving Shannon's wardrobe out of it. Sawyer's mention of the evening news actually kind of strikes me as something that sounds old to me now. Does anyone say like, oh, I heard it on the evening news, right? Like we don't.
Yeah. People don't watch the evening news anymore.
I read it on Twitter. That's where you get
I got an alert pushed to my phone.
Yeah, exactly. Boone calling his mom the Martha Stewart of the wedding industry. I just wanted to give us all a little bit of Martha Stewart context right here. At this time, Martha Stewart had already gone on trial and been sort of convicted of insider trading. March of 2004.
Oh, she had?
Yeah, March of 2004 is when that happened.
Oh, I thought that was later.
Yeah, so you know, dropping the Martha Stewart reference is kind of a loaded one in this particular year. That's where we were on the Martha Stewart legacy track. And then the last one is probably the best one, which is Sawyer calling Charlie VH1 has-beens rejects. which, you know, VH1 did a lot of, like, Inside the Music, Where Are They Now sort of
stuff. Sit down, children. Back in the day, MTV stood for music television and had the popular television music videos on. Uh-huh. And VH1 was for the old people, and they put all their music broadcasting towards the beginning of the day and in the afternoons to catch people while working out, because it was super easy to just put, like, VH1 on the TV at the gyms in front of your treadmills. Or for your grandma, whatever. Okay, and television history. Back to Lost.
VH1's programming of Where Are They Now is how I know who Leif Garrett is. I learned that inessential piece of trivia from VH1. So, you know, I could definitely see there being a behind the music done of Drive Shaft. You all, everybody. All right.
And then probably an MTV Unplugged.
Right, where Liam Gallagher heckled Noel Gallagher while he was... Okay. So what's the most 2004 thing about this episode? It is the VH1 name drop, the evening news name drop, the Jansport backpack, or the Martha Stewart reference. Dave, what's your answer?
I think it has to be the backpack.
All right. Neil?
This is a tough one now that you mentioned the VH1 thing, because I think the VH1 thing really is, like, that is a very specifically timely thing. Like, I think people still know who Martha Stewart is, kind of, because she hangs out with Snoop Dogg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think Martha Stewart has successfully PR buried her criminal past. You know what I mean? Like, I think...
True.
I feel like Boone is saying something about his mom when he's... not just that, and that's not a spoiler. I'm just saying, like, he's like... She's in, cause if he were making that reference now, he would say she's what, the Gwyneth Paltrow of the wedding industry?
Rachel Ray of the
some lifestyle blogger,
the barefoot Contessa.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh, she's the goop.
She's the goop.
She's the goop.
Yeah, she's the,
she's
goop
the Gwyneth
wedding.
Paltrow of the wedding industry.
No.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with the VH1 thing, just because that's where I'm at.
Great. And there we are. Listeners, if you have a different idea of what the most 2004 thing about this episode is, please do let me know.
All right. I think we've hinted at most calm things, except I do want to talk about here in the calm the very dramatic scene where we find Charlie, and as Neil described, incredible visual of Charlie with the final piece of tape on his finger, blindfolded, hanging, and then Jack's inability to give up for a second looks like is going to end with the scene of him just beating a corpse while Kate cries amongst the trees. But no.
He just punches him back to life.
Yeah, he punches him back to life. Just when you think that Jack's just beating dead meat, he goes at it again. And thanks to the magic of television, Charlie's back.
And it's that when Kate walks away the second time, like when Jack starts hitting him in the chest again, and she walks away, it's the musical cue that plays over that just crushes me every time. Like, I've watched this episode in the last month maybe 4 times, and every single time it works. Like, it's that good.
Is that Charlie Hangs Around, or is that some other music?
Ooh, I don't know.
They said that. I think on the last PD, it said there's one theme that's introduced in this episode that never made it on a soundtrack, but it has to have not been that, because that is a notable piece of music.
Right.
They said it was some sort of, like, chase theme. It's probably
whatever
was playing.
This is one that they come back to this one a couple of times, like this specific music cue. This is one that sort of becomes an iconic sad moment musical cue.
Ooh. For lots of future sad moments we can't talk about.
Spoiler alert, there's more sad moments than Lost.
Joanna, do you think Charlie's telling the truth when he says he doesn't remember anything?
What a bananas question to ask me. How am I supposed to answer that?
What does Charlie know?
Hey, Joanna. Hey. Dave, do you think Kate's telling the truth when she tells that story about her dad training her to be a tracker? You can't answer that question because you know the answer. So.
I could definitely attempt to answer that question.
For the sake of the calm, I'm not gonna. I can't. I don't know how to answer that question.
All right, fine. There are others. Jack and Boone follow a feeling, and a tossed flashlight going awry clanks into some metal. Dun, dun, dun. We don't have to talk about it too much because we're going to spend some more time in the future talking about that piece of metal in the calm. But otherwise, I think we're going to move on to the second half of the podcast right after this.
All right, this is the point of the podcast where we want to thank our favorite cowboys with all their daddy issues. These are our small council supporters. We want to thank Mark Tozer, Christina Sullivan, Saquon Gatling, Joe Janka, Bryce Quine, yep, Katie Slumbier, Tom Whitman, Ira Storm, Melissa Slaughter, Great on Toast, Victoria McDuffie, Marianne Donnelly, Lauren Wagstaff, Jim Scott, Anne Moreau, Stacey Winkleplek, Jocelyn, Juan DeMello, Cody Drygeis, and Fiona Grimm. Thank you guys so much.
I also have a list of folks that we would like to thank, including Aaron, Julin Aberley, Brian Rapp, Holly Hunt, Christine Kippens, Madison Ray, Carrie, Jeffrey Eng, Adam Sullivan, Jason Blackmer, Robert Bowles, Chuck Parkey, Amy Neuswanger. Yeah, all right, I feel like I nailed that one. Cameron Graham, Christian Turner, Mark Jewett, Thomas Sapansky, Elizabeth Mowbray, Mick Nick, and Betsy Lane.
And I'd like to add some people on to this list of thank yous. I would like to thank James Barta, Shane O'Reilly, Jocelyn Land, Belinda Hogan, Liz Froment, Callie Serrano, Jeremiah Perez, Micah Wood, Sarah Gates, Jane Phelps, Christina McNeesett, Brian Latino, Valerie Harvey, Ben Block, Maggie Pollen, Jesse Brixen, Benjamin Jacoby, Matt Hayes, Tiffany Welker, and Laura Kaminsky. Thank you guys so much for being part of the Small Council. You make this podcast possible.
Yeah, when John Locke turns into the weatherman.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could use that. That's how we're starting the storm. We're talking about bringing actual storm with John Locke and Boone.
Working at a box company? Did you
John Locke,
the weather?
Bringing the storm.
Guys, did I forget to say the anagram thing in the calm?
I think you did forget to say the anagram thing in the calm.
All right, I have an email that I'm going to read.
Okay, do we need to do antagonist check-in first, or do we go straight to the email?
I'm going
to
do this, and then we can do your antagonist check-in. This email's from Matthew, and he writes, "Hey there. When Ethan said he was from Ontario, that reminded me of a fan finding that people in Lost who mention Canada are usually lying. I think there's a similar thing in A Song of Ice and Fire about Arbor Gold. Anyway, Lostpedia came to the rescue to confirm my memory. I thought this might be the first time this happens, but it's actually the second after Tabula Rasa."
Yeah, Kate.
So be on the lookout for people saying they're from Canada.
This is, we also talked about this before we started recording, that is a very 2004 thing to me, which is people lying about being Canadian, specifically Americans living in the Bush era. I can't believe this hasn't come back. Like, why aren't people talking about going on backpacking? Oh, because we all have so much debt. Okay, I get it. But that was a very like Bush era thing. Like when the Iraq War was going on, it was like people traveling abroad. Americans would be like, "I'm a Canadian."
So a maple leaf. Maybe it's just because we're older. Because like when we were younger, people would talk about going backpack, and now people are like, "We're moving to Canada." Right? What people say now. We're moving to Canada. So we're just older now, and that's like the Canadian thing to do. Anyway, the end of Matthew's email says, "We also get our second anagram in this episode with Ethan Rome, which is other man, falling on Gary Troop / Purgatory in the pilot." So I didn't know. I forgot. If I knew about Ethan, I had forgotten about it, but I do know that I like knew his last name, which is a weird thing to like hold on to Ethan's last name, isn't it? Cause like he's not really a major, I mean, he comes back, but like you know, I don't
yeah,
know.
I think this was a thing when Lost, like, back in the day.
It sparked something in my brain when he showed up, and I was like, oh, it's Ethan Rome. And I was like, wait, why are you saying his last name? Like, why is that important for you to say the whole thing?
Your subconscious is like, I'm not telling.
Yeah, it's like saying Beric Dondarrion, something like that, you know, where you feel like you need to say the whole thing. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Ethan Rome, anagram, other
Ethan
man.
Rome Mapother.
I meant to say that in the calm. I'll try to remember to say it next time we talk about Ethan. But there you go.
Although it's kind of stormy though, because he is an other, but we don't really know that he's another. I guess this episode sort of breaks that open.
I didn't bleep out last week's, raised by another, raised by an other call out. Should I have?
I don't know. Like, Rousseau mentioned the others. Like, doesn't she? It's a thing.
Right. Where the others is a concept that's been introduced in the show.
Yeah.
It just hasn't. This is the first time that we kind of know who an other is. I guess this is the first time that we really know that there is another.
I mean, we know that Ethan, like Rousseau was like, oh my God, they're not alone on the island, is Rousseau. And then Rousseau's mm-hmm. like, there's these others, watch out. And Essay's like, cuckoo, great. And then Ethan's not on the manifest. Of course he's another. Like, what else is he?
I do appreciate the show trying to like half walk it, with Boone and Locke, where Locke is just like, yeah, but we don't know anybody. Like, we don't know who any of these friggin' people are outside the 10 people that we talk to. So there could be a bunch of Ethans hanging around.
Antagonistic force.
All right, fine. It's time for an antagonistic check-in with Dave Gonzalez. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, now that we have like an actual one, and the others are like some sort of outside threat that I talked about in the calm, we also immediately pivot from Locke just seeing how his little try and get Sawyer and Saeed to turn against each other thing doesn't work out, but that's okay. Locke has a new obsession in the jungle because he found the hatch, and he found it with Boone, and he was like, I think I like Boone the most the entire time. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. From here on out, he's sort of getting pulled into a bad situation with Locke till his demise.
Yeah, so, I mean, it really feels like they almost had it with Boone, because like the reason why Boone doesn't quite make it is because he didn't really work, but they almost had it in this episode. But I think by now the writers have probably decided we gotta get rid of this guy.
Yeah, I see the thing happening where Locke gets a feeling that brings him to the hatch, and now that we know that there are these supernatural forces on the island, that feeling was probably in itself supernatural to sow this conflict. But I do think it's funny that we're back in the game.
I do wonder,
with the backgammon actually showing up.
Speaking of Locke's feeling, I do wonder if people in the calm, maybe I can transport back in time and ask them if they pick up on stuff like that as like being part of the supernatural. If on your first watch you're picking up that like Locke has some, you know, continues to have this supernatural connection, or if stuff like that just goes right by you.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of it has been contained just to these, like, wandering around the jungle episode. White Rabbit had, you know, Locke's big speech about, you know, crazy people that evolved into, like, a thesis for season one about needing to be on the island. But then otherwise, like I was saying, he's just been hanging out, seemingly not doing anything because
hasn't done any magic shit lately.
That's right.
So we had to do two magic things in this episode.
I think we basically forget that he's seen the monster at this point, just because nobody's brought it up. Nobody talks about it as we're deep in the hatch mystery, which is, you know, obviously, having seen the first season, a mystery that doesn't end up well for Locke's relationship to the rest of the survivors. So, again, not quite a villain, definitely not, you know, scheming to turn Sawyer against Saeed anymore like he was the past couple episodes. But not necessarily a positive force just because Ethan's the only one trying to kill people this episode.
But I think, I think we should point out that he's genuinely wants to find Charlie and Claire. Like, that's something he's genuinely trying to do.
Yes.
Which is not a villainous thing to do.
Until they find the hatch. I think, and this maybe makes the case for Locke as sort of a villainous figure, is this is the moment where he becomes obsessed with the hatch.
Yeah.
And they stop hunting for food. And it's like, this is where his obsession, the faith part of John Locke, starts to take over. And it is to the, in my mind, detrimental to the rest of the group. So he is sort of pulling away from the live together thing by being at the hatch for the rest of the season.
Hatch, 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 hatch. We're in the storm.
Drink every time I say hatch. I have, it's not a hatch, but it is a monster-based question. So there's always been something that's bothered me about when Jack and when Jack only, I believe, Kate doesn't seem to hear it, but hears Claire scream. Is that actually Claire screaming, or is that the monster? Because it sounds weird.
Kate doesn't hear it, so I think it's supernatural. Okay.
Yes. I have a lore-based answer.
Yes.
Which is, in the Season 6 Blu-ray set, in order to undo the mystery of the Hurley Bird, which is never solved, they reveal that there is actually a ton of genetically altered birds released on the island whose cries sound like human voices.
Yikes!
So
it's Claire Bird! Say,
so this could also explain. Bird, yeah. Could this also explain the whispers?
I hope so.
No,
I can
the
a lot better than
whispers are the
souls
of the people with the unfinished business.
And that definitely they say it in the show, so it's canon. But unless they say that this was whispers, I'm going to say this could be actual Claire or some sort of screaming bird.
Screaming birds. Forgot about the screaming birds.
Yep, good old screaming birds. Nothing makes a mystery island more terrifying than birds that just sound like humans screaming.
Follow prompt. If you had to live with a genetically engineered bird screaming with someone from Lost's voice in your house at all time, whose voice would you pick?
Oh God, that's first of all, you gotta kill that bird. it may not be like for meat based purposes, but just kill the bird. That's a horrible screaming bird.
I'm gonna kill that bird.
I'm gonna kill that bird.
I think it's gotta be a see you in another life, brother bird, right? Isn't that what you want to hear?
Desmond bird?
Yeah, Desmond bird.
Or my bird would sound like the smoke monster. That would really fuck people up. Like, I just have, like, a bird in the other room, and all of a sudden you're hanging out at our house or having a barbecue. All of a sudden you hear the smoke monster from Lost. That would be pretty awesome.
Just my luck, it would be Michael saying waltz. And I'd be like, yes, I know, we've heard it.
Waltz! What if it were just a bird that just went,
That would be great. That would be like a mood bird.
So what would be the worst bird? Would the worst bird be a Walt bird?
Would the worst bird be a bird?
A Michael
Walt?
Bird? A Michael bird?
Probably, or just piercing female screams in general. Like, nobody wants a bird around that's doing that all the time.
Well,
a Shannon bird.
Oh God!
So now I'm envisioning a world in which these birds exist and are sold by the Disney Corporation. But J.J. Abrams was consulted. So here's the deal: you pay $75. It's free shipping. They send you this bird. You're not allowed to choose what voice comes out. What's the one that everyone worries is in the mystery bird? And I'm 100% sure it's Michael screaming Walt.
Mystery bird.
I got a Walt bird for my mystery bird.
JJ loves a good mystery bird.
I heard he gave a whole TED talk about the power of the mystery bird. All right, what were we going to ask me, James?
This Why does Charlie not remember what happened when he was being taken away by Claire? Now you could answer it.
Heroin.
Heroin.
Also, all of the oxygen leaving his body, and then his heart stopping, and then him having to be punched back to life.
When Diana, when we watched these episodes, like, a while back, when I was watching Diana, Diana's like, I swear to God, if she comes back and she goes, I don't remember what happened to me. And then, like, that's literally what Claire does. So I hope people aren't too mad. It's such a soap opera thing. And, like, the show addresses that. We'll get to all of this, obviously. The show addresses that. They're like, someone's like, I think she's faking, because when's the last time you heard of someone having such selective amnesia outside of Days of Our Lives, basically, so. We'll get to Claire. Claire. I don't know why. Charlie almost died. And selective part of his brain got deleted.
The show gets a little into the effects of trauma without having very solid rules. Or, I don't know. It feels like they're trying to say something about, like, how traumatic experiences can sort of be so overwhelming. But, I don't know. I don't know if it's super consistent as we go along.
It's still television trauma, which is operating by air dates and by production dates. And it's just like his withdrawal. It's not island. We're not on island time for that. We're on airing time. So by the time
we're on TV time.
Yeah. By the time we've watched an episode of Lost and it's come back and it's Tuesday again or whatever, we felt like Charlie's been detoxing that whole time in our minds, but on the island, it's just been like 12 hours, and it makes no sense that he'd be it. I think the trauma so far, or at least, I think the show gets deeper into it later, but it doesn't have time this first season, really, because I think the reality would be there, you still have a lot of, we just crashed in a plane trauma. Like, there'd be people waking up from nightmares, like, I feel a lot more on the cave and the beach of just like, I'm falling in a plane. But that seems to not be happening.
Yeah, everybody forgot about the plane crash pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's sort of like the 5-year blip. We're fine. We don't know what's going on politically or culturally, but it's fine. So what I was going to say, to follow up on the debate we had earlier in the podcast about, when did the writers know that Hurley won the lottery? They certainly knew by now. Because you'll get that
$20,000.
You'll get that money.
Which means we know the numbers, which means it's significant that Jack hits Charlie 23 times on the chest before he stops the first
What?
Yeah.
Yep. Numbers.
That's awesome. I didn't think that I would learn anything impressive about Lost on this. Like, wow. I thought I knew a lot of things.
Sorry.
Well, that's just got to be an editing thing, because there's no way that...
Well, sure. I'm sure in reality, it was 108 times on set.
Oh, yeah.
Like, specifically, hey, we need you to hit him 108 times. We're just going to take the best 23.
Yeah, I think on the list of, like, the extensive list of bloopers for this episode, which I guess involved lots of, like, camera equipment and whatnot, because they're getting used to doing their jungle chases. One of them is, like, the first time you see Charlie get hit in the chest with a fist, you could see, like, the square piece of whatever that I have blocking his, like, chest from actually being pounded in. I'm like, I don't know, I'm glad that they didn't kill Dominic Monaghan for what I'm sure was a very, like, grueling day of being punched on some sort of chest apparatus.
Roar McCann is like, wah, wah, cry me a river. Yeah, and they also said that in the original script, Christian would have called time of death at 3:23 for that girl. What's weird about that numbers entry on Lostopedia for this particular episode is they're like, he hit him 23 times and then paused and then does it 9 more times. And 9 is also italicized. And I'm like, but 9 isn't one of the numbers. So why did you point that out to me, Lostopedia?
Just because it was like, why would I not count the second group? But yes, I guess that just becomes...
Charlie...
Editing the score would be my guess.
Charlie leaves the group 4 clues. Walt blows on the dice 4 times. Kate tells Jack about a time that she spent 8 hours tracking a deer with her father. The number.
All right, now seems like a good place to bring this in. some of these are just nonsense that just like happen, you know, through happenstance.
How dare you? How dare you? There's always a plan.
I mean, if the writer's room is obsessed with these numbers by now, they just show, I mean, some of these, yeah, could be completely random.
Or, yeah, especially if someone's told, like, the editors and the directors, like, what's to be on the lookout for, then it just becomes, like, all hands on deck. The few Easter eggs I've gotten into television shows are all, like, we need a number, and then I just tell them we should use the lost numbers, so don't say they're the lost numbers, and then it, like, happens. That seems more like, we're in the editing room, how many times do we show Walt blowing on dice, considering we have takes of him doing it 10 different times? And the answer could be a number.
It could be 4, it could be 8, it could be 15, it could be 16.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously the lower numbers are easier than the higher numbers probably to reach in by happenstance.
Imagine Walt blowing in the dice 42 times.
Yeah, dude. You have to keep cutting back throughout the episode. His entire plot of the episode would be him blowing on the dice.
Here's a new mission statement for all listeners. If someone asks you for your phone number, whether it's like an unwanted admirer out in the world or like a company that you don't want to give them your phone number, why don't you give them area code 481-516-2342? And let's just make that a thing.
The all-time fake phone number.
Yeah, give them the lost numbers. Area code 481-516-2342.
Okay, hold on. Now we need to do a little Google foo to find out where 481 is so that you don't get caught.
It's Texas.
Oh, it's Texas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's my old Texas number.
Houston. Oh, it's a Houston number. Plenty of people are from Houston.
Yep. There you go.
It's when that summer I spent in Houston.
Right.
Yeah, that's where I got
the summer of my life.
Doctorate.
The winter I spent.
My dad took me out into the woods, showed me how to track deer.
That was much better than my dad, who got like so drunk he opened a pregnant woman's artery and blamed me, tried to make me take the blame for it.
Yikes. So,
jeez.
Once again, that number is area code 481-516-2342. Okay. Can we really quickly, since we're in the storm, try to come up with a comprehensive list of everyone on Lost who has a daddy issue?
Oh my God.
There's all the people we mentioned, plus Locke,
Ben,
Jin, Claire,
Penny. Oh, Claire. Penny. Shannon. Yep.
Shannon, yes.
Juliet.
Does Juliet have a daddy issue?
Yes. Her parent. Well, she has a parent's divorced issue.
Okay.
It's close.
I'm trying to think about who from the Taileys. Do all the Taileys have okay dads?
I mean, Aunt Alicia only has a mom. She was born like whole from her mother.
Alex.
Oh, yeah, Alex. Yeah.
Fair.
Did you click on the parent issues tab on Lostpedia?
No. Oh, Locke. We already said Locke, right? And Ben.
Yeah, Penny would have daddy issues.
Daniel.
Daniel, yeah.
David Shepard, Jack Shepard's son from the Sideways universe.
This is a good one. Miles, the doctor's son.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, Miles, definitely. So, you know, it's a good list.
All the best cowboys.
This does bring me back to Walt, which we did not talk a lot about.
The reason
why I didn't want to talk about Walt too much is because Walt spends this entire episode just dropping huge spoilers. Like, Walt is like, yeah, but what if the other people on the island sent somebody to infiltrate our camp? And Sawyer's like, whatever, little guy. What does he call him? Tattoo? There's another one that Walt... I track like 3 or 4 Walt things that he says in this episode, which are just like straight up true later.
Yeah, trust Walt. He's psychic.
You have to trust Walt.
When he maybe made a bear with his mind that one time.
He maybe
when
made
Walt
birds.
Says he's lucky...
birds fly into a window.
Oh, yeah, that's it, isn't it? I've seen Hereditary. I know that's bad.
Do you think, okay, follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
In the storm, and maybe this could have been a calm question, but here we are. Do you think it's a mistake to have, like, basically three Jack episodes before we get to, like, a Michael episode or, you know, a Hurley episode?
Structurally, no.
Okay.
Because I don't know if the order, well, I don't know if there's a ton to the order. I don't know. It does feel, season one feels very Jack heavy compared to other seasons. But then again, Jack's like, you know, he's the white dot. He's the white ruby, whatever those things are, those balls inside of a pouch.
What?
Right?
What am I missing?
The game piece.
What the game piece? He's the white backgammon piece of this show, and Locke's the black one.
Oh, gotcha. The white ruby.
Whatever those damn things are in the pouch with Adam and Eve. You remember that from season one?
Yeah. I'm just going to start calling Jack the white ruby.
The white ruby.
What are their little things? I don't know.
Yeah, doesn't you matter. Could do that in the column and you won't get beeped because it makes just as much sense now as it ever.
Okay, so next week we get Kid episode, Boone episode, the Michael episode, Michael Wald episode.
Yeah, I do think that I think part of it is the show had patience. You know, I mean, we're halfway into the season and it feels weird a little bit that we don't know more about Michael and Walt. You know, like, it does by this time feel weird that we don't know more things, but that's just because the show is slow rolling some of this stuff to its benefit in some ways.
Yeah, I guess so. What is sad? Do you remember what episode Boone dies in? I don't remember, but what is sad is that I guess I was reading an interview where Ian Somerhalder found out that he was going to die like right after he filmed Hearts and Minds. So they had him film his episode.
Isn't it? Because Do No Harm. Wait, no. Maybe it's Born to Run? No, I think it's Do No Harm is the one where
the birth Jack and the death happens at the same time.
Yeah, where Jack can't fix him. So it's the Locke episode before that, Deus Ex Machina.
But I mean, technically, he died. I mean, you know, Ian Somerhalder had to show up to groan on a gurney for all of Do No Harm, and then be like, "Don't know," or like whatever it is he says to Jack. Anyway, we'll get there. Point being, writings on the wall for Ian Somerhalder. Boone goes off. You're right. As soon as they decided to put Boone with Locke instead of a red shirt, it was curtains.
It's extremely, extreme foreshadowing to have Boone be the one who not only explains it, but then is the guy doing the red shirting.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the funniest things to me is that this conversation happens in this episode where they explain the red shirt, and then it's not long after that they introduce the ultimate season one red shirt, which is Arst.
Oh, Arst.
So it's like the show is like telegraphing where they're going.
It's not even a little bit subtle.
No.
I remembered it being like a little bit smoother, and it's like, nope, here he is, and he's the worst.
He sticks out like Ethan, and then he blows himself up.
He stick out like a sore Rome.
Like an Ethan Rome.
All right. So as Joanna said, next week we have, whatever the case may be, another Kate episode. Until then.
Special guest, Lindsay Romaine.
Ooh, special guest Lindsay Romaine. That's worth it, even if it isn't one of my favorite episodes of Lost.
Lindsay's favorite episodes of Lost. You guys are the same person. It's true.
Yeah. All right. Until then, where can people find more of your work on the internet? Mr. Neil Miller, let's kick it off with you.
Get always, filmschoolrejects.com. That is where I apply my wares. Get me on Twitter @rejects, and don't forget @stormpodcasts. Follow us. It's great.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can hear me talking about Big Little Lies on the Vanity Fair podcast. Still watching.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E, where I tweet out my writing, and on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where I talk about stuff like Stranger Things 3 and things. You'll figure it out if you like it. If you don't, that's fine too. Just keep coming back for the storm, and do not fall down.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.